Thanks for sticking around. I'm so happy to see everyone here today at the end of this lengthy conference. I'm happy to be here today to present to you on the Kaiser Permanente Community-Based HIV Test and Treat Initiative. I have nothing to disclose. And a little bit about the initiative. So the goal of this initiative is to support community-based interventions to reduce the number of new HIV cases and increase HIV access to care and retention in minority communities disproportionately affected by the HIV epidemic. These communities include those that are HIV positive, as well as a part of a racial or ethnic minority population, sexual minority, or substance users. This was initiated in January 2013 with our first cohort. It is a multi-site study. The second cohort began in January of this year. And this effort builds on the President's National Strategy for HIV Prevention, and UCSD's role in this initiative is to the community-based test and treat has not been evaluated across diverse populations, and thus that's the purpose of the initiative, and that's what we're going to be reviewing. So this is everyone's favorite map. We got to see another version of it in our earlier presentation from AIDSVU. Darker states obviously have a higher HIV caseload. The stars represent the locations that our different sites are in. So we've got 3 sites on the West Coast, 4 on the East Coast. And each site is working with a different population. And this is an impact evaluation that involves two armed controlled trial designs at each site, either a randomized controlled trial or a quasi-experimental design. And we're collecting data at baseline and 6-month follow-up at each site. This is a quick overview for you guys of the actual sites that we are currently working with, and I see some of them are in the audience, which is really exciting. They're all working with a different population, ranging from men who have sex with men to transgender to drug users, in particular injection drug users, rural African American communities in North Carolina. And you'll notice that in the column for intervention, they are all implementing different interventions, but some common themes are that many are artist-based or using motivational interviewing or some form of peer counseling or intensive case management. So we are still collecting our baseline data, and I'm solely going to be reporting on the baseline data. Right now, we've got roughly 319 baseline surveys that we've been able to review. This has been collected via a tablet data collection system, so it's really neat because we're working with multiple sites across the United States. They're able to conduct these surveys, upload them through that magical cloud that we all use on a daily basis, and then we can access at any point in time the data through a web browser that allows us to generate an Excel spreadsheet that just basically lists all of the data, which is exciting. So our final sample size is intended to be roughly around 600. And we're also collecting some qualitative like process evaluation data in the form of case reports, photographs from the field, and in-depth interviews with select program staff and participants for the purposes of understanding the actual implementation process, community receptivity to the programs, and how they're achieving impact. So a quick review of where we're at in terms of the demographics. This is, again, a cross-site evaluation, 7 sites. Our mean age of participants is around 43 years old. You'll see it's obviously a little bit older, but we have a range of ages 20 to 72. Most are Black or Hispanic, and it's a majority male. Close to 30% report having less than a high school education, and a large percentage reports no full-time employment, and almost half report being disabled. In terms of participants' social and behavioral risks, we've got obviously we're working with populations that are impoverished. A little over a quarter report homelessness, living on the streets or in a shelter, and this is in the past 90 days. Many have experienced some incarceration. Over half have reported illicit drug use. And then when we move over to the other side, and look at these risky behaviors. I want to again reiterate that all of these populations and all of these sites are recruiting HIV-positive participants. And I don't know if I made that clear at the start, but that's important because we're talking about HIV-positive participants, and over a quarter of them are reporting, you know, having sex with multiple partners. And of those that are reporting having had sex in the last 90 days, those engaging in vaginal sex, 8% say that it was unprotected, and 20% report unprotected anal sex. And then we also have 10% of the populations, or 10% of our study population reporting that they've engaged in some form of transactional sex, which can include exchanging sex, or sex in exchange for food, shelter, drugs, or money. So now, this is our health profile. 1/5 do not report not having health insurance, which is interesting because a lot of these sites are located in or around major cities, and with ACA being enacted, we thought that it might be a little bit lower. 25% report not being able to access needed health care, and 35% reported missing a health care appointment in the last 3 months. And then our real interest is in where they are at in terms of HIV care and case management, and 40% had not engaged in any care in the past 12 months. And of those reporting a CD4 count of less than 350, 16% were not on IRT. So just to kind of give you a little insight from the populations themselves, we are collecting qualitative data, still in the process of doing that. And I just want to share with you a quote. We saw a couple common themes. Tailoring to the population, rapid response, and patient navigation was a theme that we saw both with our providers and with our clients, or with their clients. Just an appreciation for the fact that each of these interventions were really being tailored to the specific population that they were working with. And then another one was respect and care, empathy, provider empathy. And this is from one of our sites. Our participant reported that, "Myself and my provider, we talk about drug adherence, taking my medicine on time every day, always practicing the safest sex, how my mental is, and PTSD. She makes sure that I'm getting the best care and taking care of myself. And when I take care of myself, I can also take care of my community." So one of our findings, which I'll note later, is just that we've really heard from a lot of the clients that they valued these services that were being provided so much and appreciated the opportunity to engage with these case managers and peer counselors. So hearing from our providers, again, one of the themes that we saw with both was just that the programs were being tailored to the population. One provider reported that jail releasees are getting faster linkage to care because of their because they're being linked to a case manager, and then they're being led to a medical provider. Another one that came up and was very common among all of our providers was discussion around structural barriers. Poverty and poor infrastructures that are impeding intervention success, and this is a perfect example of what we heard. In this county, not one place to get services for drug or alcohol. Have to be almost dead before they accept you in the program. Addiction problems need to be addressed when talking about adherence to medication. And this just calls attention to the fact that, I'm sure all of you are aware of this, other needs sometimes are more pressing to those participants or to those clients. And they, you know, are making it a goal to address those needs before they even think about addressing their needs in terms of their HIV care. So what are we learning? We're learning that at the out-of-care, erratically in-care HIV-positive population numbers were smaller than we expected, and smaller than our sites expected. And newly identified cases are lower than expected as well. I mean, these sites are working with some pretty unique populations, and across the board, there have been struggles with recruiting enough participants into this study. But when they do, CBOs are reaching they are reaching the populations, and they're reaching those that are extremely high risk, and the populations they're reaching are very appreciative and value the services greatly. So, you know, stay tuned. We're hoping to learn more as we move forward with the study. Some sites are already beginning to collect their 6 month follow-up data, so we're excited about that. And just with regard to the evaluation component of this study, I'd like to share that We really found that combining rigorous evaluation with innovative programming is both time and resource intensive. And there were a few bumps in the road that weren't necessarily expected. Often, the community-based organizations don't have links to the research institutions and evaluators that can provide them greater insight into the importance and the role of the evaluation in the study. And while external evaluators are considered more objective, the agencies that did have internal evaluators were better able to integrate evaluation and program goals more effectively and efficiently. And then one more challenge that we have come up against is now that sites are moving into the 6 months data collection, we're finding that retention is a bit of a struggle for these sites. They're working with difficult populations. For example, one site in LA is recruiting men who have sex with men in bathhouses, but they're also recruiting from Skid Row. And this population is particularly transient, and you can't guarantee that contact information is going to stay the same. And so we really have to work with the sites to brainstorm about how they can retain these participants. And some are doing a really great job in making sure that, you know, to engage and contact in between the baseline and six-month data collection, and that's really helpful. But it has been a problem. All right, so finally, what can we know from the initiative? Preliminary qualitative evidence suggests that these interventions support HIV needs for these vulnerable populations. Future quantitative analyses of evaluation data from the initiative are needed to confirm the promising preliminary qualitative results. But we're very excited about it, and we're looking forward to getting all our baseline data completed and our 6 months data collected. And I'd just like to thank all of the study participants, as well as the local site staff, especially those that are in the audience right now, and the UCSD study staff as well, and, of course, Kaiser Permanente. So, and this is my PI, Dr. Anita Raj. She's leading the study, and if you need to contact us, please feel free. And I'm happy to speak to anyone afterwards as well if you have any questions. It differs by site, depending on the population. A lot of our sites are using community outreach, and they're going to where the populations are, and that just depends on the population. For example, in LA, they're going to the bathhouses. They're actually in the bathhouses testing and trying to recruit participants to enroll in the study, or visiting Skid Row. For like big transgender population, they're going, again, out into the community. Other sites are also partnering with clinics or other sort of like community infrastructure that exists that allows them to gain access to those populations. You know, if people are providing support groups or something like that, they're able to go through them in partnership. Yeah. But it's been challenging. It's been, I think, a little bit harder than anyone really expected. And that's kind of a lesson learned for us. So. Yeah. Are any other questions? Thank you guys so much.